Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Center for American Progress press call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Ann Schaub. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. I would just like to remind everyone again that this call is being recorded, and by being on the call, you consent to being recorded. We'll have audio for the call up shortly after. And if you would like to see our new report on this issue, you can visit our website at AmericanProgress.org. If you have any follow-up questions for our speakers, you can email me at ashoup@AmericanProgress.org. I'm now going to turn it over to Senior Fellow Lawrence Korb, who is going to run down the details of our new report. Larry?
Thank you very much, Ann. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this morning. If you take a look at the question of sexual assault and sexual violence in the military, all you have to look at and see is, you know, President Obama has called it an outrage. Secretary Hagel has called it a scourge, and Army Chief of Staff Ray Odierno has called it a cancer. What we've shown in this report is this is not new. This has been around for quite a while, and actually, looking at the data, we found it's not getting better. It's actually getting worse in terms of the number of incidents, as well as those who are reported. And if you take a look at why most of these are not reported, I mean, you only get around 10 or 11% of the actual incidents that are reported. All you have to do is take a look at what happened in the Navy Yard to the young lady from the Naval Academy who did report the sexual assault and what she went through. I think the good news is, for the first time, many political leaders from both parties, both branches, say enough is enough. And there are a lot of bills before the Congress that have a number of recommendations in there, which we have in our report. Now, obviously, people will pay the most attention to the last one, which is to remove dispositional authority from the chain of a chain of command. But there are other things like reforming the structure of Article 32 hearings, for example, so that the victims will be covered by the rape shield law that happens in civilian courts. Now, not surprisingly, the military has resisted taking it out of the chain of command. And that's no surprise, given my own service in the military, as well as my days in the Pentagon and the Reagan administration. They resist any type of change to the status quo. So that's not surprising. But I think the point that we're making, we've looked at other countries and said, well, what happened when you took it out of the chain of command? Our allies in Britain, Israel, and Canada have done that, and there's been no impact on military readiness, which is what the military is claiming would happen. We also make a recommendation in there, if this doesn't stop the problem, taking it out of the chain of command, then do what our allies in France and Germany do and put it into civilian courts, because clearly what we're doing right now is not enough. With that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleagues here, and first I'm going to introduce Anu Bhagwati, who's the executive director of the Service Women's Action Network. She's also the co-founder. But in addition to her work there, Anu served for 5 years in the Marines from 1992 to 2004. She was the second woman to complete the Marine Corps Martial Arts Program and instructor training school, and she earns a black belt in close combat technique. So, given her experience in the service, as well as SWAN and her education, having a BA from Yale and a master's in public policy from Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, I think she certainly knows what she's talking about. So, Anu, let me turn it over to you.
Thanks so much, Larry. Good morning, everyone. As a veteran, I'm particularly proud and honored to be here this morning with two distinguished veterans and national leaders on the issue of sexual assault reform, Dr. Larry Korb and Major General Dennis Leitch. I'm a former Marine captain and company commander, and as Larry said, the executive director of Service Women's Action Network, or SWAN. founded and led by women veterans. SWAN's mission is to transform military culture by securing equal opportunity and the freedom to serve in uniform without discrimination, harassment, or assault, and to reform veterans' services to ensure high-quality health care and benefits for women veterans and their families. Over the last years, SWAN has led the fight to end sexual violence in the armed forces and to reform our military justice system. A Department of Defense survey estimated that 26,000 cases of unwanted sexual contact occurred during 2012, yet only 3,374 cases of sexual assault were reported. And according to DOD, 62% of victims who reported sexual assault experienced retaliation. Among female victims who did not report, the top reasons for not reporting include fear of retaliation, negative experiences of other victims, and fear that nothing would be done about their case. SWAN has heard from thousands of women and men who have experienced sexual violence. Few have any faith in military justice because their primary experience after being sexually assaulted or harassed is betrayal. Betrayal by their peers, betrayal by their units, and betrayal by their commanding officers. As a former commander and a Marine who experienced my own share of harassment, discrimination, and betrayal, I saw cases swept under the rug by senior officers, often enough to know that sweeping institutional change is necessary to give survivors of sexual violence a shot at justice. SWAN helped author the Military Justice Improvement Act, and yesterday we joined with Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and Vietnam Veterans of America in writing an open letter to members of Congress urging their passage of Senator Gillibrand's Military Justice Improvement Act. Despite ongoing advances in the areas of military medicine, technology, weaponry, and tactics, no significant progress has been made in ending sexual assault within the ranks. Our military justice system remains rooted in an obsolete 18th century model. Commanders, rather than trained military legal personnel, are vested with the authority to administer justice, and this convening authority includes the ability to make charging decisions, select jury members, and modify or overturn court decisions. Because the commander making these decisions is in the accused's chain of command, military justice suffers from an inherent bias that compromises both the accused's right to a fair and impartial trial as well as the victim's access to justice. The Military Justice Improvement Act reassigns this convening authority power for serious crimes to an experienced impartial military prosecutor. The change applies to all serious crimes that can be punished with more than 1 year of confinement, except for crimes specific to the military, such as a failure to obey a lawful order. The bill strengthens military justice for both the victim and the accused by balancing concerns of victims with the rights of the accused. Placing charging decisions under the authority of experienced, impartial military prosecutors increases the likelihood that decisions are made based on the law alone, rather than on political pressure, internal politics, or any other compromising factor. The Military Justice Improvement Act will not let commanders off the hook. Commanders will continue to play a critical role in ending military sexual assault. Commanders create and maintain the climate within their units and will continue to do so. Furthermore, if a military prosecutor decides not to try a case, a commander can still move forward with other forms of military discipline, including nonjudicial punishment and administrative separation. Additionally, removing the commander's convening authority does not undermine good order and discipline in a unit. In fact, most leaders responsible for maintaining good order and discipline, including non-commissioned and company-grade officers, do not have convening authority. In many joint commands, general officers do not possess convening authority. The collective effort of all of our military leaders determines unit discipline, cohesion, and combat readiness. It's time to make a change that many of our closest allies, including the UK, Canada, Australia, and Israel, have made without a negative impact to good order and discipline. In closing, SWAN is thrilled that the Center for American Progress has taken a strong stand on military justice reform, and we're particularly grateful to Dr. Korb for his continued leadership in breaking down barriers for our women in uniform. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anu. Now we're going to hear from a commander retired Major General Dennis Leitch, who served 35 years. The last 14 consecutive years were in command positions at the full colonel to the two-star level, including a joint command, culminating in command of the 94th Regional Readiness Command at Fort Devens. General Leitch, in addition to his military experience, a distinguished academic record, graduate of the Army War College, the Command and General Staff College, and the Program for National and International Security Studies at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. In the civilian education includes a bachelor's degree from Lafayette College and two master's degrees, one from West Virginia University and St. Francis University. General Leitch, we look forward to your comments.
Larry, thank you. Let me begin my comments today by stating that I concur completely with all of the recommendations outlined in the Center for American Progress's report that's being released today. Having been a member of that chain of command for 35 years, I'll focus my comments today on the chain of command issues, beginning with my observation that the chain of command, rather than asking for the right to retain UCMJ authority over sexual assaults in the military, should be asking for forgiveness from the thousands of soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines who we have failed to serve and protect over the past 25 years. We have created a climate where a serial rapist has the best circumstances in our society of perpetrating his crimes. A rich pool of victims, little chance of being reported, even less chance of being tried, and weak to non-existent penalties if tried and corrected and convicted. But an American female service member serving in Afghanistan has a higher probability of being raped by a fellow service member than being killed by the Taliban, I would submit that the chain of command has a problem. The investigation and prosecution of sexual assault cases under the UCMJ should be taken away from the chain of command for several specific reasons. The first one is that commanding officers and high-ranking military officials are often perpetrators of sexual offenses in the military. Second, even when they are not perpetrators, commanding officers have an inherent conflict of interest when it comes to prosecuting sexual assault cases. Third, even when victims do not fear direct retaliation from the commander, commanders must be given all information about the case in order to decide whether to proceed to court-martial or not, including graphic information and details that may negatively impact the victim's career. This discourages victims from reporting the crimes committed against them. And finally, an officer's rank does not connote any expertise in legal matters. Trained legal professionals should be handling all criminal cases, particularly sexual assault cases that are exceptionally difficult to prosecute. The current crisis of confidence created by the long-standing failure of the chain of command to deal with sexual assault adversely affects readiness, morale, cohesion, discipline, recruiting, and retention, and represents an embarrassment for all Americans. Thank you.
Thank you very much, General. Before I turn it over to questions, let me make a couple of other comments about some of the myths. A lot of people argue that the data is exaggerated and it includes things like somebody patting somebody on the back. No, that's not true. The data talks about sexual violence is what it is. This is the Pentagon's own data. And if anything, it underestimates the problem because it does not include data from the academies, as we've seen, that they have a big problem. Doesn't include data if a military person violates somebody in the civilian world, nor does it account for multiple uses of violence against particular individuals. So with that, let me turn it over to your questions, and we look forward to them.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using your speakerphone today, please release your mute function to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question at this time. And your first question will come from Rick Mays with Army Time.
Larry?
Yeah, Rick.
One of your recommendations has to do with culture change, and I know that that's something that you've addressed on other issues, but I'm just wondering, how do you break down the fighter pilot sort of culture where the military, a lot of people in the military just don't see that these things are wrong.
Well, let me make a couple of comments and I'll turn it over to my colleagues to talk about that. You know, one of the things that we point out in the report, a lot of people are arguing, well, the reason that you have this increase is because we're increasing opportunities for women in the military. That is not true. In fact, General Dempsey said the problem has been you've been treating them like second-class, citizens. And the other is there's a lot of training going on, and you know we talk about that. We think it could be, you know, it could be better. But finally, I think if in fact you punish people for it, you know, it was interesting. You all aware of the case where the general overturned the conviction of Colonel Wilkerson by arguing, well, he's a good family man, and I want him get him to back to be a pilot. He was convicted and given a year in prison. Then it turned out that this quote unquote, you know, great fighter pilot had actually fathered a child out of wedlock with a woman other than his wife. And the general who overturned the conviction said, I know he's a good family man. So I think that type of thing will help change the culture. But let me ask Anu and the general if they have any comments on that.
Thanks, Larry. In response to the culture change question, I think there are two key issues. The first is that our troops, and this refers both to victims as well as potentially accused perpetrators, our troops overall have lost faith and confidence in the military justice system. And the Naval Academy case is a great example of how both parties fail to have confidence in this system because the system has proven itself to have so many holes. And that the head of the Naval Academy could himself be inherently biased toward both parties. And until that inherent bias is removed from the system, you're not going to have that faith and confidence, and you're not going to see any culture change. But the other issue, which you know Dr. Korb has been working on for years now, and that Swan has been working on with servicewomen who've served in Iraq and Afghanistan, is the combat exclusion policy. And until you finally remove the last vestiges of legalized discrimination in the military, you're not going to see a culture which values women. And so we are working hard to make sure that the service branches over the course of the next 3 years fully opens up all assignments to women so that they can compete on a level playing field with their male counterparts.
Dennis, you have any comments?
Yeah, I'd just add that the culture is hard to change, but it's influenced by the policies of the institution. And right now, there is nothing in the policies of the institution or the attitude of those wearing 3 and 4 stars that indicate that the culture should be changed. So culture is difficult to change, but it's influenced by the policies of the institution, which in this case are adversely affecting this sense of equality and justice and trust.
Yeah, let me make another comment here, Rick. On page 15 of our report, we have an open letter to the leadership at West Point. By a West Point graduate who's a member of the U.S. Military Academy Board of Visitors. And she talks about the fact that in the graduation, you had a dozen rugby players walking across the stage, and these are her words, rugby players who had participated in pornographic, misogynistic, sometimes racist weekly emails targeting their own fellow cadets. Well, as long as you have that, it's going to be hard to change the culture. And the other, and it's not part of this report, and Rick, you know this, look at all the problems we've had with military people getting themselves into trouble, you know, recently in terms of gambling, drinking, and a whole bunch of other things. So I think the military has a problem other than this that they need to deal with.
Operator, can you remind people how to ask a question, please?
Absolutely. And once again, everyone, that is star one to ask a question. And it appears there are no further questions.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining us today and to our speakers. Again, if you would like to see the report, you can visit AmericanProgress.org and email me at ashoup@AmericanProgress.org if you have any follow-up questions. Thanks very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's presentation. We do thank everyone for your participation.